Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are building a brand new website. We are merging WNST.net and AM1570 and all of these things with Don Moeller. And when we merge it, we will celebrate by eating key lime pie ice cream from our friends at DeHarka, all made here with love in Baltimore. And I'm sure our next guest, we will have arguments about favorite flavors because it's what we do around here in Baltimore. Also, State Fair. And our friends at Fadley's, where you can ship those crab cakes everywhere. The last time we got together with this guy, he was the city council president, running for mayor. It was very early on. Been a little while. I know we've visited a few times, not face-to-face. Don Moeller, it's great to have the future mayor, shall we say. I know we still have an election to go with city council president Brandon Scott joining us here again. And zooming up, my man, I haven't seen you without a mask on in like months, so this is good to have 6 feet here, brother.
It's great to welcome the city council president. I also want to thank our sponsors, Jeff Moeller and Moeller and Gary Realtors, doing all kinds of great stuff out there, even in the midst of a pandemic, and our friends at KO Public Affairs. And we are very proud, Mr. President. You're actually our first guest since we were identified in Baltimore Magazine as Baltimore's Best Conversation. So there's no pressure, but now that we're Baltimore's Best, we got to up our game. Welcome aboard.
I love pressure. I love pressure. Live for it.
Well,
go ahead, Nestor.
No, go ahead, Don. It's all yours, man.
Yeah, Mr. President, let's just jump right in. This is such a strange time. I mean, you are the city council president and you're running for mayor of one of the United States' major cities. Talk about trying to do both jobs and do them in the midst of a pandemic.
Well, listen, Don, I think you said it right. It is a very trying and interesting time, one like we haven't seen in over a generation. And it's really like I'm balancing two jobs, right? Our city is struggling with two crises, gun violence and COVID. The work hasn't stopped. I'm running for mayor and have to also be the sitting city council president. But that's what I asked for, right? And that's what the city needs right now is people who want to lead through this trying time, people that understand what it means to live in Baltimore, especially in neighborhoods that have been forgotten during trying times. That's the kind of leadership that we need. Listen, by the time the votes were tallied in, folks were asking, how did I celebrate? Didn't have time to celebrate. I was notified during the middle of a budget hearing because we had to tackle a budget as we're dealing with COVID. So you just have to remain focused each and every day and understand that this is the time when true leaders show, when you're dealing with the crises that we have in Baltimore and have had in recent weeks and months.
How do things change the day you take over as mayor? I mean, I guess everybody's moving into this, and we're going to discuss all the changes that have been made in the last week with Jack leading up toward the end. But the day you take over, what changes for you? I mean, you know the responsibilities. You sat in all these chairs. You've watched various people sit in these chairs since you were young. It's going to be your chair now, and I know you've had a plan and a strategy. But what happens on day one for you?
Well, it becomes my responsibility, and we're going to build a new government, a new structure of government, show a new way forward that starts with accountability at the top, starting with me, starting with every agency head and going down. We are going to have a complete and comprehensive approach to dealing with gun violence. We are going to hold every single agency accountable for bringing the basic services and needs to the citizens of Baltimore. And we're also going to push to make sure that we are still making it through COVID in this pandemic. That's what this is about, building a foundation for a new and improved Baltimore.
Brandon Scott is our guest. It is Baltimore Positive as we merge the streams here and bring it all together. And I know Don's going to ask you about budget, so I'm going to jump the gun on this because you talk so much about budget hearings and where you were when you found out that you had won the primary. Money and the lack thereof. Brandon, I live in the middle of the harbor. You know this. I walk through the city every day. I've had a mask on. I've walked south on Charles Street, north on Charles Street, west on Pratt Street, east on Pratt, you know, up and down throughout the city. And it's amazing the lack of commerce right now. And when I even just go by the Hyatt or I just go by hotels or I see places that were functioning you know, pretty well back on March 1st, let's say, that are no longer functioning. I'm scratching my head wondering if they're going to function. And the tax problems, you know, and the problems we already had that we discussed a year ago when you were running and where we are, but the difference between then and now, just literally on a ledger sheet for any functioning government, right?
Yeah, listen, and we know that this is not just a problem here in Baltimore, but for our state and our country. And what we know that we need, Nestor, we know that it's going to be a trying time. You know, this budget that we're in now is one that's bad, but the next one's probably going to be worse, right? We know that businesses are struggling. People aren't at work. People aren't traveling. You're not. Our tourism industry has been just decimated. The things that we really depend and rely on in Baltimore, even our hospitals and our medical facilities have taken a hit because people were not coming to get their surgeries and other things, so their visits. So what we know, this is tough times, calls for people to really stand up, stand tall. We know we're going to have to make tough decisions as we go into our next budget. But also, Nestor, this is why the election is so important too. And really, if folks want to see cities and municipalities and states not have to decimate things and cut, that's why we have to figure out a way how to get real leadership in the White House, get rid of Mr. Trump, so that we can see our federal government and leadership from our federal government, where we know right now the president and his cronies are standing in the way of resources for states and cities directly to them to help fill that gap, to help make sure that we are helping our businesses, to help make sure that we are trying to keep people employed and train them, retrain them about how to be employed in different ways. And that's, I think, that's something I cannot glance over. But we'll be ready to do the tough work, but we're also going to fight with our partners to make sure that resources come that we need, deserve, and that can be given.
You know, Mr. President, you raised a couple of points related to the election, and Nestor and I have spent a lot of time on Baltimore Positive trying to focus on the upcoming election, from voting to the choices. Excuse me. A couple of things. You had the opportunity to represent the state in the Democratic roll call, and I think everyone collectively was holding their breath. You know, as we record this, and we'll talk a little bit about it, we're now in the middle of the Republican convention, but jumping back to the Democratic convention, I think everyone was holding their breath. What's the roll call going to look like? And I think by all accounts, even Republican pundits gave the Democratic roll call high marks in terms of showcasing the United States, showcasing the beauty of our nation, showcasing its diversity. Tell us a little bit, take us behind the scenes of Brandon Scott getting that opportunity and how it evolved and what was involved in having you stand up and cast proudly Maryland's votes.
Well, listen, I was very honored to represent the state of Maryland in the city of Baltimore and represent it alongside Bianca, one of our fabulous college students who's at University of Michigan. I found out from our great Senator Ben Cardin, who gave me a call and said that I had been chosen to do it, and that he knew that I would represent Maryland and Baltimore in a new generation of leadership in a Democratic Party here in our state in a great way. And we were having discussions. I'm just going to open up and just say that originally Don and Nestor, they wanted us to film it in National Harbor. As you can see, that didn't happen because there was no way.
Where's that? Is that in Maryland?
Yeah, exactly something that I said. And I said, well, most people outside of Maryland think that's in D.C. But when asked what topic on the platform we wanted to talk about, I always uplift young people's voices, and I simply said, well, let's ask Bianca, you know, and she said that we should talk about opportunity, you know, diversity, equity, and I agree. And we decided that there will be no better place to do that, to show Maryland's history, our commitment, the moment that we're in right now, than to showcase Frederick Douglass with his statue at the Douglass Myers and talk about this moment, this movement where we're fighting for racial equity, we're fighting for justice, we're fighting for people who have migrated to this country and their rights and their ability to succeed and actually have the opportunity that they should be given by the American dream. That was something that I will never forget, and that I'm proud to be able to say that I have done for Baltimore and done for Maryland and done with a member of the next generation of leaders coming behind me as well.
Well, it was really an exciting moment, and certainly exciting for us in the region who know and respect you to see you have that opportunity. We try to be some of our friends who listen probably would disagree with this, but we are going to try to be reasonable when we talk about this election. And we've had Michael Steele on, the former chair of the Republican National Committee. We're going to have Councilman David Marks, Republican from Baltimore County. So we're trying to get a variety of sides. But when we do this, one of the things I would ask you, Mr. President, is how do you summarize right now the differences between the two parties and what they're going to be choosing from in November? You know, I think we've all agreed, and the term, you've heard it a million times, you're a student of politics, whether it's a change referendum, whether it's a change election or a referendum. Obviously, incumbents prefer it not be a referendum. It's pretty clear this one's going to be a referendum. But what do you see as the major issue separating the two parties as we try to analyze this election?
Well, Don, I will say that this is a referendum and change election at the same time, what makes it unique. And I think really what it boils down to is that you have someone who I call an imposter of a leader of a free world. Someone in the president who does not represent the American values, what it means to really hold that office with dignity and respect. And what it's coming down to is, do you believe in the true American dream, the true spirit of this country, despite the issues? Or do you believe that only a certain group of people should be able to succeed and thrive? Do you believe that everybody's life matters, right? Including mine as a Black man, that my Black life and every Black life in America matters? Or do you believe the things that the president and some of his cronies like to say? Do you believe in being able to have actual public discourse and great disagreement that helps us be better? Or do you believe in disparaging people through tweets, through videos, disparaging cities, disparaging women, all the kind of things? That's what this is really about. Or as my uncle would say, do you believe in electing crazy or not?
So your uncle, what's your uncle's name?
I like your uncle. Yeah.
What's your uncle's name?
Let me meet your uncle.
My uncle Terry is the one that said that.
Uncle Terry.
Shout out to Uncle Terry. There you go.
We're gonna pay attention to Uncle Terry. You know, Brandon, I don't think Nestor and I will ever forget the first time we interviewed you at Fadley's, and you talked about your background. You talked about growing up in Park Heights and taking that bus to Mervo.
Through Lexington Market,
going to track practice, doing your homework, getting home late at night, and doing it all the next day. But what I will never forget is your description as a young African-American boy stepping over chalk outlines in the sidewalk, hearing the gunshots at night. And it seems to me that there are two challenges facing our cities and our nation. And one is this epidemic of Black-on-Black crime that breaks our heart. We wake up every day to two or three more shootings. You've talked extensively on that issue. That's one issue. And then the second issue, as we record this, just recently in Wisconsin, another African-American by the name of Jacob Black was shot seven times in the back with his children in the car. Yet another killing of what appears to be, now we'll get more facts, of an unarmed Black man. And I say appears to be because these things are chaotic and they evolve. I wonder if you can help our listeners and walk them through how Brandon Scott will address those two issues, the black-on-black crime that's decimating Baltimore and this what appears to be an ongoing onslaught of shooting African-Americans across the country. What does Brandon Scott as mayor do about those issues?
I think it's a few things, Don, just to level set there, right? I will first say is that when folks always talk about black on black or white on white crime, what I say it's people on people crime, right? Because the reality is by the numbers, if you're black and you live around a bunch of black people, violence is most likely to happen to you at the hands of another black person. Same thing for white, same thing for everyone else. But the issue here, Don, is that we have a disease that is known as gun violence that has been ravaging our city longer than I've been alive. And what we will have to do and what we will do is look at that in a different way. As I said to you guys before, I went to the doctors last week and hey, you know, my family has a history of high blood pressure. Well, what did my doctor check me for? High blood pressure. They have a history. My grandfather has colon cancer. So of course I have to get that screening. But if I'm a young man or young woman here in Baltimore and I've lost 5 or 6 members of my family to gun violence or someone's been shot, we just expect them to be okay. That's not the way it's going to happen. It's just like a cancer. It's going to be passed from generation to generation to generation. I was having this discussion with one of our homicide detectives recently when I spent some time with them on their shift. And we're talking about families that we knew that started with all these siblings that are down to a handful or one. But what we will do is start to attack that issue from both sides. I think that what folks have done, Don and Nestor, is try to make this into some sensationalized issue where you can't do more than one thing at once, right? Folks have said for so long, you're either going to focus on the immediate day-to-day violence or you're going to invest in the long term. The reality is that Baltimore has to do both. Of course, we have to focus on the day-to-day because you won't be able to have the resources and have the investment necessary to do the long term and start with the day-to-day. We know how these things work. City after city across the country has been able to reduce the gun violence by not going out and targeting every single person that looks like me and is in my age range or younger because they're outside, by focusing and targeting targeted enforcement on people that we know are violent. You call them violent repeat offenders, whatever. The most violent individuals, identifying them, targeting them, removing them from neighborhoods. But you also have to have a group violence reduction strategy to go along with that, because we know that small group of people commits violence on the other small group of people. But what Baltimore has failed to do, not once, but twice, is fully implement that, because it's not just the enforcement tool. And I know that the police commissioner spoke about this recently, but the cities that have been successful at it, including New Orleans, is that you also provide the opportunity for people to change their life. You have to do that as well. Also, we just had a hearing last week, and I know you guys heard me talk about this before, where a police hearing where I asked, where are the guns? You guys have recovered all of these guns this year and traced them back to their origin. Where are they from? 71% of them come from outside the city of Baltimore. When's the last time you guys, Nesta and Don, have heard about them breaking down a big gun trafficking ring? Or ever? You haven't. We also are going to focus on the individuals that are trafficking the weapons into our city, making sure simultaneously, to get to your other point, Don, is that none of that is going to be possible without making sure that we have a constitutionally operating police department that is operating above reproach, that we're not every other month seeing officers arrested and taken into custody or doing crazy things like we've seen, criminal things that we've seen in the past. That's why we're going to fully support and implement our consent decree. That's why we're going to train. That's why we're also going to be very particular in my administration about making young people in Baltimore more interested through our CTE public safety education courses that we offer at high schools, including at Mervo, filtering young men and women into the cadet program so that over time our police department is representative of the city by having more people from the city be there. But we know other things that we have to do. We have to modernize it and make sure that they have the equipment that they need, that they're answering calls to services that in a more modern way. And while we're improving the police department, we also have to do the other work. The other work of thinking about how we're going to cure this disease long-term from a public health standpoint. We are going to use more violence interruption models and making sure that we're modifying that to not just interrupting the violence, right? But also figuring out how we can help people change their life. We are going to do things like start to train people who we know are coming home to neighborhoods like Sandtown and others while they're in prison so that when they hit the ground, they're ready to work. We also know we have to deal with mental health and trauma in Baltimore City that often leads to other incidents of violence. We have to deal with substance abuse in our city in a different way. Don and Nestor, we lose more people in Baltimore to overdose even more than we do to gun violence, but we don't hear about that. Thinking about that and a harm reduction approach and the connectivity there, investing in our neighborhoods that have been left behind. Baltimore is the birthplace of housing redlining and equity blockbusting via legislation. Preston Street is named after Mayor Preston, who did it for now. But in a city like that, when you don't invest in those neighborhoods that you know were created to keep people down and separated, you know that it's eventually going to end up where it is. So we have to make the capital investment there, the educational investment there, the investing in the children and their families that are most at risk of losing someone to gun violence and helping them along the way. All of those things together with that focus on violent repeat offenders, removing them, focus on guns coming in here. That's how we'll do it.
City Council President Brandon Scott is here. He is the primary winner, and there's another election coming up, and I hope everybody gets their ballots in. We have been talking so much about elections. You can find all that out at Baltimore Positive as we merge the brands. Brandon, I think we could do hours just on police, right? And from the beginning of defund the police and gangs and what the suburbs think, and I know we talked a lot about that a year ago. Now that you're in this position and a year later, Don and I have done segments on focus deterrence and unions and all of these different things that happen for you, but so much of the success of our city for whomever the next mayor was going to be, as we discussed last year, was going to be on crime and murders and reduction of crime and policing. And so much has changed, I think, ideologically, even in the last 6 months, nationally, for sure, with policing. Tell me where we are with Michael Harrison, and we had a chance to get to know him a little bit. You're coming into a seat where he's already in the seat. You talked about riding around town. It's not your first, drive east or west on North Avenue, for sure, through all these years. But what are you seeing out there right now in regard to policing? And I guess at the end of the day, for any mayor, the union's very, very involved in this. And finding a better force, a better union, a better city, better resources from Sandtown throughout the city when people do leave prison and come back here. Tell me where we are with our police force and your relationship with the police department and the union here.
Well, listen, I've always said that I have a relationship with both, right? And what everyone will say about me, Nestor, is that they're going to always know where I stand. It's going to be when you're right, and they know that, right? When you're right, I'm going to say you're right, no matter if you have on the badge or not. When you're wrong, I'm going to say that you're wrong. And what I expect of folks, and I've been throughout this process trying to bring the union and police commission together as council president, when I'm there, I'll be the boss. They'll have to listen to what I say, right? And it's about making sure that, no, that we're not going to always agree. And there are going to be disagreements, and there should be, because I think that that's healthy for us as a city to have disagreement. But what we can do is act like adults in the room, make sure that we are working towards the same goal. And just for me, it's always been important to spend time beyond, you know, dealing with the commission or beyond dealing with the leaders of the union to be able to have relationships talking with the men and women that are working every day. And that's why I consistently go out, talk to them, hear what they think, hear what they see on the streets, and also so I can see it for myself. We know that we are still light years away from the reforms that we need. We know, I hear, it's a funny thing that some of the ideas that I put forward that folks think are most folks who come from a conservative background think it's so radical and it's going to hurt policing, actually came from police officers who just happened to be my friends. And I think,
what are some of those, Mr. President? I hate to interrupt, but when you say that, some of the ideas I put forward, some folks thought they were radical. They actually came from police officers on the street. Give us a couple of those examples.
Yeah. So for years we've heard this conversation about, like, why police are showing up to every single 911. You know, I've been 911 call, and I've been a person for years talking about using online and telephone reporting for minor crimes to free up, and so we can actually have patrol officers who have time to patrol. But it was a few years ago where some officers that I know were saying to me, like, hey, listen, like, every time there's this thing with someone who's having a issue of behavioral health, do I really need to go there? And that's what, for me, piqued my interest about figuring out ways, different ways to do that. And now we know, you've heard me and other folks talk about, not every time, right? Because sometimes there's always going to have to be a law enforcement, especially when weapons are involved, et cetera, because we can't, we understand that our mental health workers have to be safe as well. But that's what helped me work alongside mental health workers and others about reimagining how we respond to behavioral health crisis. I heard it from both sides that this is something that we should be looking at. And I think that it's great that we are now starting to have those discussions here in the city.
You know, I know you've been very gracious, and we don't want to take a lot more of your time. We hope you'll come back regularly. I do have a couple of quick questions, because I think you're talking directly to the citizens is really effective. And I think it allows folks to then make their own judgments. We can't have you on without talking about voting and this whole sort of brouhaha over the United States, which, and again, I invite my Republican friends to challenge this, but to say this whole controversy around mail-in voting was created by one person, and it really seems to me to have made the entire November 3rd election chaotic. What is your message?
I think that was the goal, by the way, Don.
Right, that was probably the goal. But as you go around the city now and you talk to voters, you've got some skin in the game. You're on the ballot. You need the election to work. What are you telling folks, Mr. President?
Well, first thing I'm telling them that what you said is just right. The president and anyone who is trying to make it harder for people to vote by mail in the midst of this pandemic, when they know the second wave is going to be here during the time of the election, is trying to suppress votes, because they know the only chance in hell that Donald Trump has to win is if so few people come out to vote. They know that. That's why we have here in Maryland, we have to think about this, right? Level set yourself in this reality. Despite the issues of having a rush primary and first ever mail-in election here, we had a record turnout. So knowing that, right, knowing we had a record turnout despite the issues, you would think that the state would just say, okay, we're going to fix the issues with this, how people got their ballot, mail everyone a ballot, and we're going to have the highest turnout we've ever seen in a general election. Nope. What did the governor decide to do? Turn to the Republican playbook as he's now looking towards his time beyond being the governor of Maryland, and say, we're going to mail everybody application first and then mail you a ballot. Well, one, I thought we were in the midst of a fiscal crisis. It's going to cost us $5 million more. Two, we know that they wouldn't be able to hire all the election judges. You heard that. And three, if you're going to mail everybody the application, just mail them the ballot so that they can vote. And I'm just encouraging everybody to request their ballot now, mail it in, drop it off at one of those drop boxes, but avoid having to vote in person at all costs, because what I don't want is that the foolishness of the president and members of his party will lead for us to have thousands of people sick here in our city and our state simply because they wanted to show party unity and die on a hill, which is literally going to cause Baltimoreans, Marylanders, and Americans to die.
Brandon, having gone through this 3 months ago, and I remember the election ballot process very well over in the first, where typos happen and you're waiting and Sheila's waiting and everybody's waiting and wondering, and there's days on end and they're shutting down 3 o'clock. Everybody went home for the weekend. I mean, all of that went on 3 months ago. As you look back on it, if you were running the Board of Elections, how would it be different? I mean, what's your beef? Even though you won, I'm sure you have a beef with it to some degree as far as how it went, because it could have been a little smoother here for sure.
Well, listen, my beef isn't really with the local Board of Elections. My beef is with the folks who decided to use that vendor from outside the state. And my beef really is about them not correcting the mistakes this time, right? I think that's the reality, Nestor. While I was upset about the process, I was confident that they were doing it with the utmost integrity. And I think that's what really matters when you're talking about elections. But like for me, the thing that I was really upset about is that instead of just improving the process, they're trying to build a brand new one and literally force the Board of Elections, not just here in Baltimore, but across the state, to operate two elections at once. Like, that's the reality. We should simply be mailing everyone a ballot. People should be getting their ballots as early as possible. Instead, they're attacking the postal service and trying.
Well, I've already done it twice this year, right? With the 7th, and I filled out the little bubble. I've mailed it in. I've signed my name. I know I need to sign the envelope. Like, I know the rules. I mean, it's been the easiest of my lifetime to vote. Literally,
yeah, and it's actually been it's much easier. And then I want. Sorry about that. I want to say this too. I went. Sorry. I went online and applied for my ballot. It was actually harder. Jesus.
You cough one more time, we're COVID testing you today. I'm going to have you down at a convention center.
Look, I got my test yesterday. I'm good to go.
There you go. You were talking about the online application.
That's hay fever.
The online application to get my ballot was like harder than to order a new Social Security card. They ask you, for a driver's license, Soundex, or a Maryland ID, but you don't need that to actually vote. You just need to be able to show who you are, and it's pure voter suppression. Pure.
I found it cumbersome. It's interesting, Brandon. I found it. I did it as well. I found it cumbersome. I actually communicated that. We've had good discussions with the folks.
It felt like they didn't want you to sign up. It felt like they wanted to make you just go away, right?
But, and we have a standing invitation. And again, we hope he'll take us up on it. We'd love to talk to the governor and get his perspective. We've reached out to his folks. We do so on a regular basis.
You know how I reached out to his folks? I ran into Kiefer at the Bartenfelder watermelon stand. We were getting watermelon and corn and potatoes and heirloom tomatoes and fresh peppers.
So come on, Kiefer.
And Kiefer came up from behind me and I said, "Keef, congratulations. I'm making a formal request with no marshmallow. Is that good? Do you like that?"
Yes, sir. In order to get Kiefer to come on the show, Chief of Staff Kiefer Mitchell, by the way, you would have to buy him a lumberjack shirt from Land's End, and then I'm sure he will come on.
There we go. Hey, Brandon.
Shots fired.
Kiefer, listen. So, Kiefer, that was City Council President Brandon Scott, who wants you to get a new shirt. Brandon, before we let you get out of here, this is Baltimore Positive. We believe in this city. You believe in this city, or you wouldn't be doing this. You wouldn't be devoting all this time and energy into what really is a 24/7 job. What gives you hope about the future of Baltimore? What, when you think 10 or 15 years out, what makes you think, man, we're a good city, but we're going to be a great city?
Well, a few things give me hope. First and most importantly, the fact that we had a election where people voted for change, people voted for a changing of the guard, a new way forward for the city, people who want to see a policy in our city operate in a different way, that's very hopeful. When you see the things that happened in Baltimore with the protests and how our young people stood tall and they all didn't allow people to try to come in and take over their protests and say, no, this is about us. This is about how we feel. This is about their lives matter. This is about their opinions matter and the way that they did that. But most importantly, Don and Nestor, I spent a lot of time on Zooms with young students and young people across the city. And that's what gives me hope, the most hope. Where I hear them talk about how they want the city to be better and how they're going to make it to be better, how they're looking forward to taking my job one day, right? That's what gives me hope, because I can see in their eyes the fire and the desire that they have for Baltimore to be the best Baltimore that it ever has been. That's where the hope, that's where I get my hope from, is talking to the future of Baltimore at every turn.
One day we'll have crabs and beer and crab cakes and Oreo games and normalcy at some point. You'll be the mayor, and we hope you come back on. And we're here to help you out, man. You know, we live here too. So if anything we can do to help you make it better, you know, we're a reach away as well. And we hope to continue this conversation, hopefully in a more positive light moving forward, and hope the place gets better here, and certainly hope the election goes through the way that we, I think we all hope it will.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Adam.
Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Brandon Scott, City Council President and winner of the primary election to be the next mayor of Baltimore. Make sure if you've missed any of our voting election stuff, you're checking that out at Baltimore Positive. You had some great conversations with lots of leaders, including Ted Venatoulis and Johnny O and now Brandon Scott. And we are merging WNST.net and Baltimore Positive together in early September. You'll want to be on the lookout for that. Big thanks to our friends at Taharka Ice Cream. I am almost out of Honey Graham again. It's my favorite. It's why I keep running out of it. I think I'm feeding it to the cat under the table. I'm not sure. Made here in Baltimore, the award-winning ice cream, serving up social change as well. Fadley serving up crab cakes all over the world. They will ship them to you. They're in Lexington Market. You can curbside. You can stop in. Get a little mac and cheese. Get a little crab soup as well. And, of course, our friends at State Fair and El Guapo in Catonsville. I snuck out there for a little waffles and a little chicken, a little raspberry sauce last Saturday morning, and learned that Baltimore Magazine has selected us, primarily because of Don Mohler, as the best conversation in Baltimore. I thought your mic was muted. I wasn't even sure.
No. And they did a wonderful, wonderful article. Pick up that Baltimore Magazine so that you can see Baltimore Positive.
I heard you were the chief of staff for a
couple of years. Yeah, listen, that's fine. I don't care. They can call me whatever. They can call me late for dinner.
They called you the best, though, despite having me around.
I was delighted to be named. We were delighted to be part of that. That's you know what, Nestor? Being named Baltimore's best conversation, that's not really about us. That's about our guests.
No,
it's about our listeners.
I tell you that every
time.
It's
about all of our sponsors.
Full disclosure, after every segment, Mohler texts me and he's like, that was the best one ever. He'll do it when we're done here with Brandon because he's going to be the mayor. And I'm like, you know why? Well, you pick somebody smart to come on. That's my secret sauce in radio. That's what's made my career better and my conversations more enjoyable, is finding people I can learn from. Literally,
people,
learn from, right?
Great people, great sponsors. You know, we mention all our sponsors. We talk about Jeff Mohler and Mohler and Gary Realtors. We talk about our friends at KO. I mean, it really is exciting. It's a team effort. But I started to say that in that same episode, I mean, that same edition of Baltimore Magazine, there is a spectacular article on the first family of Fadley's, Bill and Nancy Devine, the nicest couple you will ever, ever meet. They're on the floor there every day at Fadley's.
And it's her crab cake recipe, by the way.
Say hi to Nancy. Find Bill up in the catwalk. Nestor, it's a lot of fun, and we're going to keep on talking and try to live up to Baltimore's best.
You know, I had Damie on about a week and a half ago, and I didn't realize they had five different kinds of soups that day. I'm like, why don't I just stop over and get through that? You know, I've had the crab cakes and the fries and the coleslaw and the mac and cheese a million times. I want to, like, branch out a little bit. Only I would want, like, cream of crab soup on a 100-degree day, right?
There you go.
Now, on behalf of Don Mohler, former Baltimore County Executive, I am Nestor Aparicio, and all of our sponsors, and Taharka and Mohler and Gary Realty and KO and everybody that makes the wheels go around. A big appreciation to Stephanie as well as Brandon Scott. We are WNSC.net AM 1570, merging our brand, calm locally, as Baltimore Positive.